Hello and welcome back to the Master of None podcast. I'm Stephen Murphy, your host. I'm joined by one of the regular rugby crew at the moment, that is Westy. We could be joined by Sam at any stage, so we will keep you. You'll hear his dulcet tones joining at some stage. But Westy is here, and we will get stuck into the Six Nations being over, which is quite sad. I do love the Six Nations. It is a great, what is it, 6 weeks? Six weeks of action? 7 weeks, maybe? I don't know. It's a long time, nearly 2 months. Westy's doing calculations in his head here. It's like watching Matt Damon in Good Will Hunting. That's the
term. Good.
I really struggled to get that there, but we got it in the end. Westy, thank you for joining us as always. How are you and how was your weekend?
I'm good. Yeah, my weekend was fun. I had a nice long weekend. I was off on Friday. We went to a quiz on Thursday evening. A quiz last year that we came second in, so we had a big chip on our shoulder about it, and we followed up that second place with a very respectful gentleman's eighth or ninth.
We were top ten. They didn't announce how far down we were.
Yeah, this is our own speculation as well. We don't know where we finished. Don't have the results that low.
I think we had similar points last year and came second. I think
so
the quality
else
of errors. Yeah, we plateaued, and everyone else has obviously been working hard in the off season. We rested on our laurels, and we also brought Sam in, which probably didn't help us either.
Yeah,
brains of a bird, that guy. Brains of a bird. But yeah, you also had a hot date Saturday for the rugby, right?
I did. We went to Glynn's here in Ornamore to watch the Italy game and the Ireland game, which was great because after I was very happy after the Italy win. And then obviously the Ireland game was quite a tense affair. So it was a really enjoyable atmosphere. Obviously St. Patrick's weekend as well. So pub got busier and livelier as the night went on. I didn't stay too late now because we had to go to the parade on Sunday, of course. Nice extra long bank holiday weekend.
Yeah, I want to give thanks to you, Westy, because I was very much on for staying for that France-England game in the pub, which would have led to us being there till probably midnight. And I would have been a zombie the next day. So thank you for denying that and saying that you were just going to go home. Sunday, Stephen, really appreciate that. And yeah, parade was fun, actually. It's, you know, we are residents now of Ornmore. We didn't grow up here, but it's nice to get involved a little bit and go to the parade and see some pretty sick old cars, actually. There was one particular Merc that I would love to purchase at some stage in my life, but we'll see. Yeah, we will get stuck into the Six Nations, obviously, but we still we have our final fantasy rankings. The top five is in. It was tightly contested between these five, not between us, of course. I think I'm actually like bottom, am I? No, I'm second bottom. So thanks to De Bale for not playing. He only has 235 points. So thank you for not letting me come dead last. Westy, very respectable last probably 2 weeks there, I would say, by you finishing 45th. Up four spots. You must be happy with that mid table.
Yeah, I really phoned it in the first week and subsequently the second week. I had to claw back space. It really is, if you don't start well. I mean, some people obviously do pick up points. You do pick up points as it goes on, but you really have to kind of have a good first week and then build. It's really hard to claw back points late in the game. But yeah, it's good fun. I really enjoy doing it when I do it. But you know, sometimes the game's kicked off and you've forgotten to update teams and stuff. So
yeah, that was a lot of me as well. But You mentioned picking up big spots late on. We will get to that in a second. But in fifth spot, Lewin, L-E-U-A-N. I'm going to go with Lewin. Up three spots to finish fifth. Congratulations to Lewin. Up two spots into fourth, Lupalinda. Up 17 places to third. Sitting 20th and just rockets up to third. Back row back. With just an incredible last round. And then second up one spot, Yippee Trye Mother Rucker. And out in front, and it's been, I think, first place now for three rounds in a row, is Asti. Wins by around 31 points in the end. Credit to you, Asti. You've been nothing but consistent over this tournament. You deserve trophies yourself. You deserve some sort of championship. But you, more importantly, you get our respect. And Westy, you can't put a monetary value on that, right?
No, that's probably the most valuable prize of all, I think.
I would say, forever in the sports ground you see us, I'll buy you a pint. How about that? That's probably the monetary value of our respect, actually. About 450 to €5.
Yeah, so everybody at Sports Ground next Saturday, just come up to Steve and tell him you're Asti and get a free pint.
I will need you to prove by showing me your team or a driver license that says Asti on it, because I don't think that's your real name, whoever it is, but we'll find out. So yeah, well done to everybody involved. Thanks. It was actually a lot of fun to read these out and keep track of it. So yeah, we'll do it again next year. We might get a prize actually for the winners, not just our respect. That will also come with it, but there will maybe a monetary value as well. All right, let's get stuck into the rugby. As you said, we were in the pub watching this. Most people would think story of the weekend is Ireland going back to back. No, nada, not even close. You know who also went back to back? Italy. Back to back wins. Two wins and a draw, their best ever finish in the Six Nations. They spank Wales. I don't care what the scoreline says. They spanked them in Cardiff. 2 years, 2 out of 3 years now, they've beaten Wales in Cardiff. The scoreboard says only a 3-point victory, Westie, but we know with 10 minutes to go, this was a 17-point game. And two late tries from Wales very much brought up the respectability. Italy 24, Wales 21. We questioned last week, we said, we've seen this before, Italy get that win and it's great and it kind of puts the critics off for a couple of years, but they never back it up. We expected them to do well this game, not necessarily win. There was expectations on this game to do well, and they stepped up and delivered. And I said, not just beat Wales, they really dominated them for 75 minutes of a game. Handled it incredibly well, looked fantastic in a lot of phases of the game, and we were sitting there expecting a mess up or a mistake or a fuck up, and it never came, Westy. It was very un-Italian like how they handled this game, and a sign of things hopefully to come. As I said, you are a huge Italian fan, Westy. I saw how happy you were sitting beside me in the pub. Talk us through your emotions.
I think I'm just a big like underdog fan in general, you know. Like I kind of love, I love when you know for I love when a smaller team comes off, you know, like that. And especially with all the kind of all the shit that Italy have been getting for the last few years, I just kind of love seeing them starting to finally come into their own. I don't know if it was kind of like an errorless performance. I think the first kind of 10 minutes in particular was quite kind of scrappy from both teams, but. One thing you have to credit Italy was their game management. You know, they took their penalties early on and then they managed to build a good phase of pressure. And like Montiori's first try is fantastic. He just kind of glides through the defence. There is kind of issues there maybe around a Welsh defence, I think, especially as well for Pani's try late on. He just walks through three defenders, you know, that they really should do better to put him down. But I think someone said it to me really well. Do you know, like 2 years ago when they won in Cardiff, Garibisi was on the ground crying with joy. Do you know, it was this huge... euphoric moment because they hadn't won a game in however long, but something about their performance throughout this whole game, there was an air of inevitability about it. You know, there was they kind of knew that they were capable of winning it. Okay, I don't know if it necessarily they were expected to win it, but they clearly backed themselves from quite early on and they played some absolutely beautiful rugby. I mean, what was it, 19-0 at half time? They really kind of shut Wales out, 11-0 at half time. They really kind of shut Wales out of it, and then look. Of course, the wheels come off a little bit towards the end. Not the first try, but the Will Rowan's try is kind of just, you know, it's hammer and line, and they get over. There could be arguments made that, you know, it's not releasing because I think it's Brex is latched onto the ball and trying to rip it, but the try is given. The last try, the Mason Grady try, it's just poor defending, but the clock is up anyway. They know they're going to win. It's a shame because I think a 10-point win is probably fair. You know, that's a 17-point win. It's probably a little bit unfair to Wales because they do have a better calibre than that. Okay, it wasn't their best day. But yeah, the last try in particular puts a shine on it for Wales, but it takes away from the true story of the occasion, I think. One of the other kind of things to remember, I think like Michael Lamro has averaged 20 tackles a game so far. I think he set an Italian record against Scotland for like 27 tackles in one game or something like that. Like Brex and Menichel have just been fantastic. Brex in the centre and Menichel in the centre the last few games. And yeah, it's just this kind of great crop of players finally realising their potential. And like I said it 2 years ago, I'll say it now, I said it at Foreign Podcast, they may well go another year without winning a game. But look what's happened the last 3 years. They won a game, went a year without winning a game, and they've got literally a 50% result from the Six Nations this year. They've won two, drawn one, lost two. They only lost to Ireland and England. Like that's shocking. It's actually shocking that they've got these results and they're still only fifth. You know, they've won two, drawn one, and they're still second. There's still a chance they would come bottom of the table, you know? But also, yeah, just to point out, They haven't lost in Cardiff since before COVID. Let that statistic sink in for a second.
Yeah, if you take Ireland out of the Six Nations, that was a really competitive and exciting table. Like, it's second place 15, third place 14, then 12, 11, and then Wales end fourth. But, like, Ireland obviously were finished 5 points ahead of everybody else, but still could have lost it on the last day. So, I know, look, it's not hard to be competitive when there's only six teams in a tournament, but still, one of the best ones in terms of competitive for a while. Yeah, look, I think, Wales. They were poor a lot of the game. A lot of what Italy did was making Wales poor. I'm not saying that, but I just if you're a Wales supporter now, you're looking at Gatland, you're looking at the next 3 years, you're looking at I don't there's not a ton there to be like, oh, this is exciting. I'm looking forward to this part. And apparently he offered his resignation to the board after the game, but I mean, he still probably would have had to been paid, right? Or would he not have been paid for the next 3 years if he resigned? I wasn't sure. Like, if that, it was potentially it was like, hey, I don't want to work for the next 3 years. I want to get paid. Here's my resignation, which sounds great, but the board, declined it. But again, even if the fact that he's offering that doesn't, that's not like, oh, I'm. That's a coach who's really confident in what's going. Like, Borthwick was down and out there for a long time, but he was never talking like that, and he was always quite. Still defending his coaching and all that, so it's a weird place for Wales to be in. Where I can see we've seen now with England, and we'll get to them in a second, but we've seen now them maybe turn a corner and see what they're progressing towards. Scotland are a decent team, maybe on the decline a little bit. I don't think their golden generation is getting any better. France, who the hell knows? We'll get to them in a second as well. They could be amazing next year or awful. There's really no telling. But with Wales, I'd say the only team I can see maybe. Again, really declining again. Potentially, I don't know. Maybe they'll have a massive couple of months now, and they'll come back firing. But I said Italy now looking at next year. I know you're saying like they might not win again, but they have France in Rome. They have Ireland in Rome, I believe. They have Wales in Rome. So like, they're not gonna fear France after this year. They're gonna be favourites in that Welsh game probably, more than likely at it. And I said Ireland, obviously, who knows what they're going to be like, but they're not going to fear Scotland, and they're not going to fear England. There's potential there for results, and I hope they get them. As you said, it's not necessarily about the results; it's about the performance. But we've seen enough from them this year where you're like, okay, there's genuine, winning once every now and then isn't enough for a massive change. Winning two, drawing one, nearly winning a third, that's huge. Like, that's proper change. That's a proper shift in momentum. And as we said before, like, they've got some seriously good players. And I think you've touched on it there, but I loved Lamaro's reaction after the game. It wasn't like a, like, Negri was crying. Lamaro was just kind of like, this is what I've been waiting, like, this is what I expect. You know what I mean? Like, this is what I want for this team. And, Melanchello has quickly become a fan favourite of, a favourite of ours as well, just because, not because of the name, but he's absolutely fantastic. Didn't even have Capuzzo playing at the weekend. And, like, he's arguably their best player. Like, it's crazy how talented they are, and the underages are still getting better and better every year. You bring three guys in from that team maybe next year, and it just that's how you build and build and build. But it's exciting times for Italy.
Yeah, I think the captain of the U20s last year is already with an Espoirs team in the top 14. He's already with one of these games. I think it's Stade. I'm not 100% sure. I'll have to double check it. But as I said, I think I said last week, like you're going to end up in a situation in 2 or 3 years where like these Italian players aren't used to losing. We even look at Treviso doing well. If you want to compare Italy and Wales, one of the easiest things to look at is their domestic competition. That is the URC. You've got Benetton, okay, now they've fallen down, but they were on a great run at the start of the season. Quite high. Zebre are also picking up points. They're not bottom for once. Whereas the Welsh teams kind of seem to be going backwards from where they were other years. So you have to remember as well, finishing fifth in the Six Nations comes with about an extra £500,000 anyway. I think it's about €700,000 maybe you get. I think you get £1.5 million for coming fifth this year. If anything, after a lot of years of criticism, it kind of shows that the Italian Rugby Union is actually investing its money quite cleverly. Like the underage teams are going up, their club teams When I say they're club teams, I mean they're URSC teams. I'm trying to avoid saying provincial teams, so that's what they are, but I can't find their franchise teams is the correct word. Have recruited quite strongly, like even getting Louis Leina from Harlequins. That's quite a strong signing. Things like picking up Rhino Smith from the Cheetahs 5 or 6 years ago. It's quite a clever pickup of players, and you know, even Monty Ioane a couple of years ago now, he's obviously playing in France now. But getting him in and getting him captured as an Italian player, like. It does show that there is forethought in what they're doing, and now with an increase of money into it, with a tour to come in the summer, it's an exciting time for Italy. And you know, the only reason I say they might not win a game next year is just because I'm afraid, and even people said last year when they lost all their games last year, oh, the same old Italy. It's like, but it wasn't, because they were all close games. They were a better performing team. They were a better strategic team, and you have to remember as well, like Gonzalo Quesada's first Six Nations. I mean. You really have to be hopeful in where he can bring this team with more time with the group, more time together. Will he change some of the backing staff? I think he was the only change from last year. I think the rest of the backing staff stayed the same. Where will he go? So yeah, it's really exciting. And like again, the inverse is Gatland in Wales, right? So they've gone back to Gatland, hoping that Gatland will reinvigorate them. But they have not been investing in their youth. They have not been investing in their franchises. And it kind of seems like the chickens are coming home to roost a little bit now. I'm not chalking Wales off because, again, in every one of those games, they showed what they can do. They showed what they can do if you give them half an inch. They showed that they're capable of scoring tries. They showed that they're capable of defending. They're capable of switching it on. But for whatever reason, it's just not there at the moment. Is it too much change? Is it too many young players in at once? It might be. But, it's definitely winning this game would have been like, okay, we did tough Six Nations, we grew into it, we got there. But because they've lost the final test now, it's just be interesting to see where they go from here. Do they double down and keep backing the youth, or do they make changes? Because by all accounts, from what I've read, the WRU makes around the same as the IRFU. They won a Grand Slam 4 or 5 years ago, but that money is not going back into the franchises. That money is going on. I've read that they're paying for like CEO holidays and stuff and trips for the lads and. They have a different structure where they fund the club game rather than funding directly, funneling it through the provincial game, like in Ireland, let's say. So, I think, yeah, what I'm saying is I think they're paying for having poor structure for the last few years and relying on their golden generation. And now that golden generation has moved on, I mean, George North played his last game and that's it. I mean, that's a sad kind of sad finish for such a monumental player in world rugby. But yeah, I was interested to hear Gatland offered his resignation. Taking it would have just confirmed everything that, you know, I think it would have just confirmed that it was a bad decision to bring him back. You also can't shy away from the fact that they had a relatively successful World Cup. Now, there was a lot of changes between the World Cup and now as well, but I guess what I'm trying to say is they have the talent pool of players. They're just not, they don't seem to be maximizing the results from it. And it'll be really interesting to see where they go from here.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point on the Welsh stuff. And he was on some chat show there recently, and they were asking like, "Oh, how often do you go visit the regions?" And it was just awkward. He
Never.
didn't have an answer. Yeah, exactly. So
But there
it's.
isn't that much of a massive appetite in Wales for the regions because they haven't, like it's so easy to criticize from Ireland because we've a built-in structure. We are tribal when it comes to our counties. The rugby were smart to avoid that, invest in provinces and do it that way. So you weren't necessarily directly competing in sports, but we all row in behind our provinces because it's our geographical region. But one of the great things about it is, like, as somebody who was registered with a club in Galway and was registered in Club in Ballina, I am a registered member of the Connacht branch. I feed into this system. And I guess because they don't have that clear-cut defined system, it's not easy to set up because, again, you've got people from Neath who don't want to support Swansea, who see Ospreys as a Swansea team and don't want to support them. But they need to do something better to bring the. Because I genuinely think, I agree, I think Sam Warburton said something better, like, yes, youth is important, but they have to invest in these franchises. They have to get people in behind them because that's your week in, week out bread and butter.
Yeah, no, really good points. But yeah, fantastic weekend for Italian rugby. Now joined by Sam. He has come in to the podcast. Sam, thanks for joining. How are you?
Good, yeah. I heard Westy going in on Wales and I was like, can't miss this, but I gotta get on. Well, what should we throw into Wales?
I was very polite with my criticism of Wales.
The point there with the Warburton one, I read him and he's getting a lot of plaudits for his kind of his journalistic integrity at the moment and how he's doing. But I do kind of think it's funny. Like last year he was slagging off the URC, but he's on the board of Cardiff. So he seems to be kind of a different man on his day job in the board of Cardiff and his journalism. like, kind of, we need to support the regions. And then it's like, well, you were the one bad mouthing the league that they're in. So I think, yeah, kind of, Wesley, you said it, it's just structural. It's from the head down. It seems to be rotten kind of to the core. I think for years under Gatland, in the first instance of this kind of Welsh Gatland era, they got away with it because the international team is so good. But they always had players leave. They always had players going to England. They always had players kind of pack it in. That's not, when it's not successful at the international level, it starts to really highlight everything. And then, like Wesley said, you know, they start to fight each other, which makes it enjoyable from the outside viewing. But I know if Ireland was the same, if Ireland weren't successful for 2 or 3 years, the provinces would all start killing each other. We're already slagging off Munster nonstop. And, you know, Munster won the league last year and Ireland are winning. So if Ireland would start to lose, we would just turn on each other so quickly.
I believe you're referring to Munster, Sam. I don't know a Munster. So
yeah, I've missed the first half of this. How many Munster fans have you already annoyed already?
We haven't even touched on the Irish game yet. Okay. So we're just in with Italy, because that was the story of the weekend. So, right, we'll move on to the Irish game. Ireland-Scotland was the follow-up to the Italian great win. Ireland go back-to-back in their Six Nations Championships. Their fifth ever Six Nations win, which is kind of, I don't know, I don't know if I expected more or less, but five at the moment.
But it's five
in the Six Nations area. Yeah, in the Six Nations area, yeah. They beat Scotland 17 points to 13, up 7-6 at halftime. Tense game again. Ireland, again, I wouldn't say played near their A game. And still come out on top against a Scottish team that, let's be honest, Ireland own at this stage mentally. I think the Scottish team, I never fear them. They'll probably beat us at some stage in the future, but just never really too worried about it. But just again, Ireland again. I suppose the French performance now really looks a lot different in hindsight, considering how kind of average enough they've been at times. You know, with the Irish performance in France, I thought was very, very good, and it was by no means flawless, but since then they haven't really gotten out of third, fourth gear. Now they're still winning, and they won the Six Nations by 5 points, which is a great sign of a great team, but just not getting running on all cylinders. Now a lot of that could be down to the fact that, you know, you are missing Johnny Sexton, obviously, who was such a key part. I think Mac Hansen being missing is huge, and it's nothing against Calvin Nash, but they're just very different players, and used very differently in the system. But a lot of Ireland's attack has looked stagnant. I think obviously probably a mix of Sexton and Mac probably has not helped that. Now, again, a massive credit to Crowley. I think he's come in and been very, very, very good, and handled things very, very well. And it's his first Six Nations campaign. He comes out with a winner's medal. So there's absolutely no denying that. The same with Calvin Nash. We'll get into the game first before we get into the Peter O'Matney stuff. Sam, do you agree kind of with my Irish review? Just again, nothing spectacular, but enough to get the job done. It's kind of been the campaign so far this year, hasn't it?
Yeah, not the worst campaign to have after a World Cup, especially given, you know, the World Cup was a feel-good time, but it was quite disappointing in the end of the day. Like, we did, you know, we were the best team in the world going into it, and we didn't quite live up to that. So that is going to bring a dampener on it. You have the moving on from Sexton, which is, it's significant. I know it's only a single player, but it's more of an era. Wesley, you kind of spoke about it a lot last season about how Ireland had for 15 years kind of built around Sexton and made it very hard to even integrate other players into the system because it was Sexton's team. So for Crowley to come in and to have the Six Nations he had, I don't think he was spectacular, but I think he's very much proven that he's worth a go as the starting 10 for the foreseeable future anyway. And then the conversation will begin to emerge about who is the backup, and we will have another 15 years of who the backup to our 10 is. It got the job done. I would have liked to have seen us maybe capitalize and build upon the performance we had in France. But like you said, that's contextualized by the rest of their tournament. I thought Scotland were going to try and upset us. They were going to make a little bit more of a game than I tend to downplay Scotland, and I tend to kind of dismiss them because they're constantly talking about how they're going to, this is their year and they're going to upset us, and it just doesn't happen. It hasn't happened, and it will continue to not happen for the next couple of years, especially if their 20s integrate into the team and their bigger kind of more experienced players retire. It looks like it's actually just going to get worse for them for the foreseeable future. So Ireland got through it. I would agree with you. I think that it was a bit lacking in the maybe the the attack that we've been, so we've seen Ireland get quite robotic and quite clinical in the last number of years, and that wasn't there in this Six Nations. That's probably not the worst thing. I think that's more of a reflection on Scotland having a good game there, England kind of being back and putting a really good test to us. You know, those games were more, they were asking more of Ireland than games had in the year previous. So I'm happy to get through it. I don't necessarily agree it was third gear. I think it looks like third gear, but I think we were actually just asked questions. I think Scotland played quite well, especially defensively, and England played very well offensively, and that's kind of made it maybe not as easy and clinical and walking over the line as it has done in the past. But there were some stellar performances from them. I think Nash was a fine deputy for Mac, but I don't think he really threatened the starting jersey because, like you said, Mac, a lot of the kind of creativity and the taking the onus off the 10 shoulders, that comes from Mac. And I didn't see Nash doing that as much. I don't think that's his game. I think it's going further away from Lowe's game. I think Lowe has maybe just lost a turn of pace a little bit and is becoming more of just that power out and out left winger as opposed to cutting in as much as he used to. So there is this transition in that team. And, you know, losing Mac, the changeover from Johnny Sexton there's reasons behind it, but I think it bodes well that you win a championship not playing your best or being challenged like that in the first year of this kind of new four-year cycle, as we'll all start to get to hear.
Yeah, well, so what do you think about that performance? Because again, when you look at the table, you know, they're 78 points differential higher than anybody else. They've scored 6 more tries than anyone else, and they've conceded, I think, 6 less tries than everybody else. Like, the table looks like a dominating performance, all throughout, obviously despite the loss to England. How do you view Six Nations campaign for Ireland?
I kind of see it as a job done. Do you know, like, even at the end, right? Like, I was really happy when we won, but kind of since, like, the day after the game, it's a bit like, oh yeah, okay, we got that done, we got through it, we won that. I think part of the problem is that no one was expecting the French result. No one was expecting us to win by that much. You know, people can say they were expecting us to win. I don't think anybody will argue. Nobody was expecting to win by that much. So I think that kind of gave us maybe a false, it was a bit of a false dawn. It gave us a false idea of where we were. We forgot that Jack Crowley, it was his first full round Six Nations. We forgot that it was Joe McCarthy's first Six Nations. We forgot that it was Calvin Nash's first Six Nations. We forgot that Robbie Henshaw had been out of form and was playing back in. We forgot that, you know, Tadhg Furlong has had problems over the last year off the pitch, and we expected that we are all guilty of saying that whoever wins that France game will win the World Cup, will win the Six Nations, you know. So I think when we got it done in such a barnstorming fashion, we thought that maybe we thought this team was you know, we forgot about these things that had changed within the team, you know. I think the England result will probably help us in the long run, because I think that kind of brings us back down to earth a little bit. I thought the final game against Scotland, I thought it was actually brilliant. I thought it was real, as the Southern Hemisphere lads would say, it was real finals footy. Like, it was real, it was kind of two teams both kind of afraid to make mistakes, trying to build pressure on the scoreboard. Our first try is a little bit opportunistic. Like, it's a really good read from Dan Sheehan, but it's a little bit, you know, I wouldn't say it's direct skill from Ireland necessarily. It's just good reaction, which again is part of our DNA, is you know, playing the way you feel, or, you know, reacting to things that happen on the pitch without kind of quite a rigid game plan as we used to have. But yeah, I think it's a pretty successful Six Nations. I think you've cycled in players now who are in contention to keep playing at this level. I agree that maybe Nash isn't quite at the level of Mac Hansen, but who's to say that Mac Hansen will walk right back in for the next game? You know, it could be an interesting, okay, we will all say that. But, right, you've got other things to think about then, right? If Keenan is injured, does Mac Hansen shift to fullback? Does Jimmy O'Brien come right back into the team? These are other questions around, I think, that Nash makes more difficult, right? Because he did play so well. Crowley, I don't think is the finished article. And again, I don't think anybody's necessarily saying that, but a very, very impressive performance to play almost every minute of every game for the Six Nations, right? Okay, I think, you know, Frawley played the Italy game, but in these big, heavy-hitting games that maybe he wouldn't be as used to getting the game time in, he's given the reins completely. Things aren't quite as fluid as they were, but it was never going to be like that. The one other thing I would say, and this probably isn't how Irish rugby is built, I don't want this to be a question of who is our 10 and who's our backup 10. I want that competition there year in, year out. I want 10s to be pushing each other. It worked with Johnny Sexton, but I was never comfortable about the fact that we built a team around one player. And hindsight's 2020, but I think it came back to bite us again in a World Cup quarterfinal like it always does. So I'm all for a competition been embraced in places. I think we went out there, we knew we were the best team, we got the job done, we developed players, we developed game time. And now we've a really good tour this summer to look forward to. I think, again, and look, I don't want to say this all the time, but we also won. That's a massive amount of prize money coming to Ireland that will help us continue to develop.
Yeah, I think it's, as well, Mike Catt is leaving at the end of the season. A new attack coach will be coming in. Now, that didn't help France this year, so it can go both ways. But if Ireland's attack has started to become a bit stagnant, having that fresh, set of eyes or new ideas could be huge. Well, I want to give a shout as well to Jordan Larmour. Come in at the, whatever, 20 minutes before the game kicked off, full back. I was doubtful. I think I'm not a huge Larmour fan. I think Ireland did a great job of kind of protecting him a little bit, but also he did everything that was asked of him, and that's all you could ask for, especially coming in so cold off the bench. He hasn't played in the Six Nations, so to come in like that and play well and to do the job that was asked of him, fair play, because Keenan's boots are not easy to fill. But again, we've said that before about Farrell's great teams. Some lads just come in, it's they don't have to do anything spectacular, they just have to do enough, and that's what all Larmour did.
I think the team really worked together. I think the understanding of roles in that team is very evident in that match. Because one thing I would have said is, I'm surprised Finn didn't rain bombs down on top of him consistently. But if you see any of the high balls that came down, Lowe fielded a lot in the backfield, and so did Crowley, and Larmour kind of pushed out, and they rotated around. So I think there's contingency plans, and bringing players into it are all ingrained in how the team as a whole plays. So like Keenan's out, Larmour's in, and everyone knows their role. And Crowley drops back a lot more, Lowe drops back a lot more, and they protect the players. It's kind of almost like what's it, on a kick chase when they kind of shepherd players. I think that's what Ireland did, is they allowed Larmour to get comfortable into the game. I thought he was grand. I thought he was, I'm not his biggest fan. I think he runs sideways a little bit too much, but I think he was absolutely solid. But I think a lot of plaudits have to go to the other players around him for that as well, for bringing him into it. And then, you have to be positive the fact that realistically right now he's probably our fourth, if not fifth choice fullback. When you think about Mac and Jimmy O'Brien being in the mix before Frawley being there as well, it's a great place to be if he has a game like that, which is just a quite bog standard, maybe 6.5, 7 out of 10. And he's that far down the pecking order right now. So I thought it was brilliant by him, but I think a lot of plaudits go to Lowe and Crowley in particular. I noticed catching and fielding a lot of high ball.
Yeah, again, yeah, 100%. Let's talk about Peter O'Mahony. I love the Slag Munster, don't get me wrong, but I'm also probably the biggest Peter O'Mahony fan you'll come across. I think he's absolutely amazing. And he's probably my favorite Irish player of all time. And basically, he cries during the Ireland's call, which of course the soccer fans got stuck into on Twitter. But this then sparks basically a wildfire across social media that Peter O'Mahony's retiring. And it just sort of spread throughout the game. We were sitting in the pub watching it, Westie, and we're like, where the hell is this coming from? Nothing was said. Now, we obviously couldn't hear the build-up, but apparently nothing was said in the build-up. And it just all stemmed from this sort of outburst of emotion. But, O'Mahony has been known to get emotional before a game. He's obviously captaining, potentially a Six Nation winning team. There's a lot of reasons he potentially could have been, could have been retiring before this. But regardless, I think Sam, you're saying there may have been hinted on online as well before, some reports out. But what annoyed me a little bit was straight after the game, that was the first question he was asked, and that didn't sit well with me. Personally, I suppose, if you're a journalist or a TV reporter or whatever, you're trying to get the story, but there has to be a sense or a hint of at least of respect. And he's just won a Six Nations, captaining his team, and the first question you ask is this the last game? It didn't sit well with me. Wesley, did it sit well with you?
No, not at all. It's funny. I don't know exactly where I come down. So, one of the, I don't have any problem in asking him once. Probably the wrong moment. Probably the press conference after the game is to ask him. Look, there's been a lot of rumors that it was your last game. Like, do you have any comment on that? But what also means, they literally asked everybody. Like the last, they asked Gibson Park. They asked, off the ball, asked Finley in an interview after the game. Like, it's kind of just, I think. Unless he has said something about it, it's different with someone at George North who announced his retirement before the game. Or, you know, if Peter Mahoney had said, look, I'm thinking of hanging up the boots, I don't know why he would say that in public, you know. But it's a massive achievement. Like, and you know, we said at the start of Six Nations, Grand Slams should be special, they should be rare. There's been 13 in the last 25 years, which even I think is a little bit too much. It should be a little bit more difficult to win a Grand Slam. This is in no way a consolation prize, winning the Six Nations, having only lost one game. It's still a massive, massive achievement. It's his first year as captain. I know he's been a member of that squad for years, and always captained individual games up until now. I know he was captain of Munster, but it's a very, very, for a man who gets emotional about it anyway, it's a very emotional thing to do, to captain your team to a victory of the Six Nations, and to have the final in inverted commas at home on St. Patrick's weekend. Like, it's a huge cauldron of emotion for anybody, I think, you know. You know, I'd love to see those soccer fans' reaction to Gareth Bisse 2 years ago scoring that conversion, like we were talking about earlier. And it's not like he's fucking bawling his eyes out. The man wipes his eyes, like he could have just had something in his eye, you know. Although, you know, I know he's cried before. But I think it takes away from the achievement as well. You know, it's looking for the next story. Oh, are you going to retire? It's like, can we not just talk about the fact we won the Six Nations? Like, does it have to always be what next? You know?
Yeah, the media circus that always follows it. Sam, what is the future for Peter Mahoney in an Irish jersey? Obviously, a lot of talk this year about his contract, central contract. You know, he was announced as captain really before any of those discussions took place. Where do you see what does next season look like for Peter Mahoney in a green jersey?
Well, I kind of had a different opinion to everyone else when he was announced as captain, and there was a good number from Munster fan, a good number of Munster fans were kind of getting quite agitated that he wasn't on a central contract, and he was like, he was the Irish captain, he should be on a central contract, you know. And then Munster obviously were looking to they're looking to rebuild, and they didn't want to be affording the contract if he was taken off a central contract. And now some sort of consolation prize version where the IRFU pay for half, if not more, of his contract, but it's not a central contract, has been agreed. But I kind of always felt that, you know, if Farrell had named him as captain, but also was like, we don't want to commit to a long-term thing, that was absolutely fine. You know, the idea of being a captain for a season or for a tournament or for the year while they transitioned away from the Sexton era was always, I was perfectly fine with that. The idea that your captain is named now for a World Cup in 4 years never sat right with me. It just so happened that, you know, Ireland had Sexton as the ready-made replacement for Rory Best at the time. And that was always the long-term plan. It was never going to be taken off Sexton. But I felt that Peter O'Mahony's, you know, potential workload would be reduced in this Irish team, and therefore being captain, you know, a match day captain may not be the long-term plan, but it was Farrell's way of kind of integrating a new era into this squad and being ready for this quick turnaround before Six Nations after the World Cup. So, you know, with that, I never felt that he needed the central contract. I understand the idea that your Irish captain should be centrally contracted. I like and I appreciate that idea, but I don't know if Farrell always saw him as a long term. I would personally like him to be, and if it turned around and he was the captain for next year's Six Nations, I would have no issue with that, because I think he's right now in Ireland the best man for the job of captain. But I think it was quite evident in the pre-match a little bit, and then the post-match, that there is discussions ongoing about his career. There has been discussions in the past about, you know, Munster not wanting to pick up the tab for his being taken off a central contract, and he may look at Pastures New, he may look at France for a payday at the end of his career. You'd love to see him as a one club man for Munster and retire Munster fan, but you'd also love to see him get an absolute whopping payday and go off somewhere. And all of those are still in the mix. I think that he will probably be captain going to South Africa this year and may sign off from there, and not just, you know, look to maybe have a year or two as a solid club player, bring the career to an end that way, or be in and around it, or move to France, something like that. But with Ireland right now, I still think he is, you know, for those intangible things, or those things that you can't really put stats on, I think he's the best person to play six for Ireland right now. But I think that if you start to look at stats and you start to look at potential impacts of the game, you start to look at growing it, there are other players. There is Baird there, who looks to have gotten his act together, looks to have gotten an attitude right, and he really is looking to push into that team. You've got the idea of Doris and Conan kind of fighting it out there. One of them may also be able to move to six. You also have Tadhg Byrne if you want to try and get James Ryan into the same team as Joe McCarthy. So there's lots of options at six there, and O'Mahony might not be the best player stats wise or on paper or ability to play full games wise for the next for in the not so distant future. right now, I still think there's an intangible level. There's an unstatifiable level that he does just bring something to that team and that you need him. But I think Farrell is looking more than just at the end of his nose. And that could be the reason why there was controversy around or kind of there was the issue around his central contract and may have led to what looked like an emotional outburst. If I was to speculate entirely, I believe and this is just what I think could have happened is that he let know to the lads in the dressing room the week leading up to it that this was potentially his last international game for Ireland. And that's why the emotional outburst came. He's an emotional guy. He plays with his heart in his sleeve. You know that. And it looked like that. But that is just me speculating.
Yeah, I'm torn on it myself because I'm kind of on sides of... Andy Farrell has been pretty loyal. I think even to a fault at some stages has been very, very loyal. Do I think the Peter Mahoney deserves, you know, to finish his Irish career on his terms? The emotional part of me is yes. Is that how sports, professional sports works? No. So I was like that. So I'm kind of torn. That I was like, do I want him to continue on as Irish captain and play next year? Absolutely, I do personally. Is that what's best for Ireland going forward? I don't know. I don't know if holding back Ryan Bird, I'm just using him as an example or whatever that, but is he another factor that will keep Ireland progressing into next year? Potentially, but I'm really torn on. I think I totally agree with you, Sam. It's like the intangibles that you can't measure on a stat sheet of just like pure heart and, you know, commitment and setting the tone and all that. He is, you know, the best that we have in that sense, but you know, his body is also, I'm sure, pretty beaten up the way he's played over the last 20 years. Like, that's going to happen. And that's the sad part about sport. Is bowing out as Irish winning Six Nations champion a bad thing? Absolutely not. Is going to South Africa and potentially getting beaten there a better way to send off? No. But I don't know. I want him to finish it on his terms. I understand also at the same time that's not how sports works. So I'm torn. And that's kind of the sucky part of it, that it kind of sprung up. I think we were also, like, with Sexton's retirement, it was obvious that it was coming, whereas Mahoney's sort of been sprung on us, you know, potentially the last game on the day of. It's very, very different, and again, I would have rather to send off for Mahoney necessarily than Sexton, but again, that's the end of my personal preference. But, Wes, before we move on, what's your thoughts on the Mahoney situation?
I kind of echo what you guys have said. If I'd like to see him finish up on his own terms. I used to be a big believer in you know, kind of, I think Sam said this as well, in these kind of World Cup cycles thing of like, you know, oh, you know, he won't be next World Cup. Maybe we should move on and get someone else in. But again, professional sport just doesn't work that way. And thinking that way doesn't necessarily win you World Cups. So I think as long as Peter Mahoney wants to play and is available for selection, as you guys said, he brings a lot more than just his ability on the pitch. He's a fantastic leader. He plays with aggression, with passion. I'd like to see him keep playing as long as he wants to. Again, one thing to raise, and you probably won't find this very often at international level, but your captain also doesn't necessarily have to play every game. You know, like, there is a lot to be said. You can still be when you're captain, you can still be a voice in the changing room. You can still be a voice at training. We see it a little bit happening now at club level. But it doesn't necessarily have to be the case at international level. It doesn't necessarily have to be the case. It has to be in a central contract. The one thing to be wary of is, excuse me, going down a road of like Scotland, where you have two or three squad vice captains, and then leadership becomes this muddled up mess. So I think Peter Mahoney was a great pick for captain as Johnny Sexton retired, but maybe as a transition phase captain, as a familiar face and voice to take over when the other big familiar personality in that room is gone. So yeah, look, I hope Omani stays. I think he doesn't necessarily seem to be slowing down to me, but look, he gave up the Munster captaincy as well at the start of the year. He could have been eyeing up a finish at the end of the season for a long time now. You just don't know, but it's up to him, and he deserves the right to make the announcement himself and not be bombarded by questions about it at every opportunity.
Well, actually, we've got some breaking news in the podcast because Peter Mahoney just posted on Instagram and he said, many of you have asked when to cut back your hydrangeas. He said, I wait until I've established buds before I cut back mine and roughly cut 12 inches off the ground around the second or third bud. So there you go. There's breaking news on the podcast. It's an ad for Woody's on his Instagram. So there. Sorry, I forgot your hopes up there, guys. Couldn't resist. But yeah, we'll keep posted on that. Obviously, Conor Murray has been given, by all accounts, a central contract extension for the year. Half paid by Munster, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not central contract. So they're doing this half paid contract. Frisch, Jaeger, Zeebo, Murray, everyone around the island is getting them.
But if you hate Munster, Sam, what are you talking about? Okay, well, that's interesting. We'll keep a track on that as well. Right, last game that was on Super Saturday was Le Crunch. France hosted England, 33 points to 31. 16 points to 10 at halftime for France. Arguably the best game of the tournament was the last game, Sam. This was an absolute barnstormer from the minute one to the last penalty that decided it all. Your thoughts on this game?
Really, really enjoyable. Probably, yeah, I'd say the most enjoyable game of rugby. I was speaking to a friend of mine the other day, and he said he's kind of disillusioned with rugby. He's saying it's been pretty boring. And I said, well, if you watch a lot of Leinster in Ireland in the last year or so, it kind of is. It's kind of methodical in its way. It's very critical in everything that it does. And it's, you know, you kind of say there's an old kind of trope that college football is more exciting than the NFL, because the NFL is just so perfect. Every catch is made, every yard is taken, every tackle is made, whereas big mistakes lead to big moments. And I think that this France team, with the capabilities that they had but were underperforming, and this England team on the rise the way they have been in the last two games, it led to the opportunity for a good game. And it was a very exciting game, right down to the controversial enough finish. But I enjoyed this game so much that now I'm excited for next year's Six Nations. It did exactly what it needed to do on the last day. There was nothing major on the line. It wasn't the winner. The tournament wasn't on the line. But for those English players, I think a lot of pride was on the line there. They were trying to back up their Ireland performance, trying to prove that it wasn't just a once-off based on passion. And France, I think, needed a big result because of how poorly this Six Nations has gone. They're scraping through Scotland controversially. The draw with Italy, losing to us quite heavily. I think that France wanted to set down a marker and just let everyone know that, you know, just because they didn't perform doesn't mean that they can't, because they're a phenomenal group of players with another set or two of under-20s coming through that are also sensational. So they led us and had a great game. I was really, really impressed with a lot of that English team. I said last week that I thought, you know, an England team wasn't, I said I thought it was not a once-off, but I didn't think that was the way that the permanent fixture and the way that they were going to continue to play for the next year or so. I think that they'll find some sort of happy medium, but I thought that they were right back up with picking up where they left off against us. Ford, again, proving that he's Borthwick's 10, proving that he does all the stuff that Borthwick wants. And Ben Earl, I saw someone on Twitter kind of talking about, like, who is a player you owe an apology to because you don't rate him. And it's like, I think Ben Earl was the one that I kind of wrote him off, and I've just been gone. He's really changed my mind on him. I think he's an absolute sensational player, and I'm going to be biased and say Bundy was player of the tournament, but I don't think Ben Earl or Mancello were too far away. I think those were the two that probably deserved a little more than Bundy, but I hope Bundy wins it.
Yeah, I saw that trend. I'm just waiting for when Ben Healy eventually leads Scotland to a Six Nations. I'll tweet that out that I owe him an apology. Just on England, like, talk about 2 weeks that has totally changed the outlook of a team. I think you're right. I think, I don't know if it's necessarily Borthwick's plan clicking, or if it's just the emotions and the of getting up for the Irish game, and then France away, keeping that momentum going. I don't know. As you said, I don't know if this is England now for next season, or maybe it is, and maybe they've turned the corner and they're going to be, you know, a real pain to deal with for the next couple of years, or if it's just a case of, you know, the last two games, England or Ireland at home, France away. I mean, you're always going to be pumped up for those games, and they played brilliant stuff, but, you know, to score 31 points away to France is you know, a great sign of things to come potentially for England. France, Sam, next season with France, you probably touched on it already, but, like, what are your expectations for France next year?
I think France will get back closer to where they were. I'd be interested to see about the management team. I know that there was some changes after the World Cup, and to see how they kind of continue on with that, whether or not he's lost the dressing room would be a big one. But I think that they'll get back to the standard that they have been for the last 3 or 4 years. You know, that France the traditional view on France was that they were capable of beating anyone on their day, but they were a basket case. And then for the last number of years, throughout the 20s and into this team, they've developed a much smarter attitude towards rugby, and they all seem to row in quite well. The international teams seem to take a bit of prominence and preference over the club teams, which in the past had had all of the buy-in from the players. So they had done really well to get to it, and then they had the bitterly disappointing loss in the home World Cup. So that will have set them back mentally a little bit. But I think, you know, the players there, they have the depth there. They have the infrastructure in place with their league. It's the most successful and most popular league in the world, I'd say, in terms of viewership and people buying tickets and sponsorship and all that. So there's no reason why they won't get back to where they can be. Just, I think, depends on the coach and whether or not the players buy into it. And a couple of players that tried to retire that didn't, whether or not they continue on, it remains to be seen. Their 20s have been extremely successful the last number of years. A good crop of 20s coming through, and they have a lot of experience because they have so much depth in the league and the Pro D2. They have the opportunity to play these players and get them 40, 50 league caps before they get their international debut, which is a sensational place to be. So I think next year they'll be back and they'll be the team to beat again for Ireland. I think, you know, England, I think, will probably not be as poor as they were at the start of this Six Nations, but probably not as good as they were at the end of this Six Nations. I think they'll find a happy medium under Borthwick. I don't rate him personally as a coach, and I don't think what's happened the last 2 weeks is really in the plans for him long term. I don't think that that's how he wants to play rugby. He's never indicated any desire to play that way before. So I think that we'll see, you know, England maybe fall down a little bit from this match, and France maybe step up a little bit from where they are now. You know, Dupont coming back after the Olympics as well would be huge. I saw himself in Etemaker training with their club with this week. So, you know, he'll be back in, and he's a spiritual leader in that team as well. So I don't think they'll be as basket casey as they were this year. I think this year, one just came so soon after the World Cup. It was hard to get the mentality right. And they're not in France, which I thought was going to be a cool thing for them, but it could be messing with their match day routine and all of that stuff that they're used to, where they're staying for Six Nations weekends. You know, they're not going to Paris and staying in a familiar hotel and training in the same places. They're taking trips around due to the Olympics and the renovations to the stadium. That'll all change next year and they'll all be back to normal. So I think they'll be tough to beat. But we have them at home next year, which is always the more advantageous for Ireland.
Yeah, and England at home as well is always nice. We'll finish up. Just looking at the table here, I think of the six teams, I think every team is probably on the up, I would say, progressing. I would have Scotland and Wales possibly getting worse, or at least plateauing for next season. I just don't see what the future for Wales is. I think Scotland's, we hear the golden generation of this team, and I think none of them are getting any younger. I think their window to win was probably the last 2 years, and you know they won 2 games this year out of 5, and that's really not doing it for them. So I think Ireland will continue probably on their current path. Now the new attack coach, who knows, that could upset the apple cart a little bit. France, as you said, I think they'll get together a little bit too. England have shown enough the last 2 weeks to show me that they're at least on the right path. And Italy, I mean, you know, there's only one way the arrows point with Italy, and it's up after 2 wins and a draw. So exciting times, a competitive Six Nations, I said, especially if you take Ireland out, it was very, very tight. And exciting, I do love the Six Nations, and I'm sad that it's over, but it's always nice. It's always a nice start of the year kind of thing, you know, something to look forward to, spring and all that. So very, very exciting times. But we're back. URC is back this week, Sam. The real rugby is on. Connacht host the Lions, I believe, this weekend, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. Actually, a huge game for Connacht. They need to be winning that game to continue their march for the top 8, which is very, very important. So we'll be back next week to recover or to chat about the URC. We appreciate everyone tuning in for the Six Nations coverage and anyone who partook in the Fantasy Six Nations. So well done to the top 5 there. Sam, you didn't win, just in case you were wondering. The fantasy, I know.
It's a moral victory for Sam.
It was.
Waste of time and forget about it. You and Westy both at one stage said you had forgotten about it. So,
yeah, I came second last. Westy came second last. Yeah, and the guy.
You tried.
I tried for 2 weeks, so and then I came second last.
Trying is more embarrassing than not doing anything.
That's a great life lesson for a teacher there to give his kids. Don't even bother, because you'll just fail anyway. But yeah, we will be back next week to recap all that action. Until then, Sam, we appreciate you and chat to you next week.
Night-night.